You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is sponsored by Ellie Mae Pet Supplements. Visit us at battle-cancer.com for more information on how Ellie Mae Supplements can help your dog.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Commercial or homemade, organic or natural, raw or cooked, what is a pet owner to feed? The choices in pet foods would cause a Shar-Pei's hair to curl. People are becoming more aware of nutritional options for themselves as well as their pets. But making well-informed decisions can be difficult. Who do you believe? Your breeder, your neighbor, the veterinarian, or the kid at the pet store? Dr. Edward Moser is a veterinary nutritional expert. He'll help us take a bite out of the mystery of which food will best enrich your pet's health. So sit, stay. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Did you know cancer is the number one cause of death in dogs? One out of every three dogs is affected by cancer at some point during his lifetime. And half of those dogs affected die. Shocking, isn't it? Symptoms of dog cancer are nonspecific and often lead to a late diagnosis of the disease. But before it reaches an advanced or incurable stage, cancer exhibits mild but recurring symptoms. If you think your dog is losing weight, has a loss of appetite, looking dull and listless, is non-social, or has any sores, swellings, bumps, or lumps, or abnormal growth anywhere, it's time to visit the vet to make sure everything's well. This message is brought to you by Ellie Mae Pet Supplements. Ellie Mae is an animal healthcare company that creates products which focus on improving the overall health and quality of life for your much-loved pet. Visit us at www.battle-cancer.com for more information on dog cancer and how Ellie Mae supplements can help your dog.
Buster, you're telling me my dog food products can't go on your shelves?
That's right. Didn't pass one of my Petco certified nutrition checklists. Sorry, Wayne.
Who made these checklists?
Geniuses. Very smart guys.
Well, it's good enough for most grocery stores.
Do you see cheese puffs on my shelves? Mayonnaise? Soda pop?
No.
That's because I ain't running no grocery store, Wayne. Your pets will get better nutrition, I guarantee it. Petco, where the healthy pets go.
Enter the code DR10, D-O-C-T-O-R, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Hi, this is Marcy Davis and my service dog Whistle, and we're your hosts of Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Working Like Dogs is the show where you can learn everything you ever wanted to know about working animals or working dogs. Whether you're a member of a working dog team, or you've just seen a working dog or animal out at the mall or the grocery store, and you're curious about how these amazing animals work with their human partners, then Working Like Dogs is the show for you. Join us for the inside scoop at Working Like Dogs on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Moser, thank you so much for being with us today. There are so many questions that I have. People are always coming in feeding these new different foods I've never heard of. So how do you really tell if a food is good for your pet? There's so many options out there.
There are a lot of options today to feed dogs and cats, and it's a real challenge for owners today. One of the things that makes it even more difficult is the knowledge that probably feeding is the most important thing we do with our pet. And notice I say with, because it's a social event. not only are we providing all their nutrition that they're supposed to get in a day in a bag or a bowl or a can, but we interact with them, and it's very critical that our interaction is a positive one. So we have a really important topic, and a lot of people say, you know, where do we begin? And maybe the best place to begin is when you're getting a bag of food, what kind of information's on it?
And you look at it and it looks really good. And sometimes I know I'm drawn. This is the way I buy wine, I have to admit. I look at the label. Ooh, that's a pretty label. I'm going to buy that wine, having no idea what's inside. I think people do the same thing when they're looking at that pet food. Oh, it has that dog on it that's bouncing and the kitty looks so happy, or it looks like my cat. What are you supposed to read on the label?
There's a couple of things that are really important to get as far as information on the label. The first thing is the nutritional adequacy statement. And really what that tells you is, who is the audience for the food? Who is the food balanced for? Is it balanced for a young growing puppy, a lactating mother, a dog who's trying to lose weight, a maintenance animal who is maybe a couch potato? You know, who is it that we're trying to feed? Unfortunately, there are only a couple of life stages that are recognized by the ruling body, which is AFCO, which is the Feed Chemist Association of America. And one of those is a growth and reproduction lifestyle, and one of those is the adult maintenance lifestyle. None of the other ones are really addressed. And so what we're left with is foods that are either formulated for growth and reproduction or for adult maintenance. And those are sort of the broad categories that are recognized.
When you're looking at that label and it says, we'll meet all life stages. So if you have that couch potato, is that going to be appropriate for the couch potato?
Good point. The all life stages will mean that it's formulated to meet the most difficult physiologic situation. So if you think about it, the most demanding physiologic situation is the growing puppy and the lactating dog. And so really then you think, gee, do I really want to feed a diet that will support growth and reproduction to a dog who's laying on the couch and not expending any energy? That would be one of the clues to say, gee, maybe that's not the diet I want to select for a dog who's at rest, let's say.
At big rest. So is that one of the reasons why when you look at the label and it says, oh, for a 40-pound dog, you're supposed to feed 6 cups of food a day, and you're only feeding 4, and that dog is getting whiter and whiter and whiter?
That's right, because you can imagine the difficulty that happens when you're the person who's making the label for the consumer, and you're faced with not a real specific life stage, but with a very broad. That 40-pound dog could be a 40-pound beagle or a 40-pound German shepherd, if you see what I mean. It's not specific. And so what owners really need to do is pay attention to the feeding guidelines, which are by law on all dog and cat foods. But they have to remember that those are just guidelines, just good places to start, and that they need to adjust the food intake of their pet based on a couple of things. And they're really important that people do the things I'm going to mention. Number one is they have to weigh their pet and know what their pet weighs. That means they have to get them on a scale.
And not just eyeball it and go, it's not really fat. It's okay.
You're exactly right. That's one of the most important things that a pet owner can do, is actually get them on the scale. The second important thing is do something called a body condition score. Basically, what a body condition score is, by palpation and observation, you estimate how much energy your dog is storing in its body for a rainy day, let's say. And so what you really need to do as a pet owner is become familiar with how to body condition score a pet. When you read literature about overweight pets, what you find is that most people don't know that their pet is actually too heavy. And people think, oh, gee, you know, they look fine. But like you said, they keep getting wider and wider, and because we see them every day, we don't recognize it. So it's very important to weigh the dog and to body condition score. And for your listeners who want to know how to body condition score, they should go to a place acvn.org. That's the American College of Veterinary Nutrition .org. And on the lower left-hand corner, when they get onto the homepage, there's a place where they can click on the American Animal Hospital Association Nutritional Assessment Guidelines.
Could you briefly, Dr. Mozyk, explain, after you go what you're talking about right now, how to do a body condition score at home?
Sure. And what will happen is when you go to this website, they'll give you pictures of what I'm going to describe.
Oh, good.
But what it is basically a 1 to 5 scale, 1 being very thin or emaciated, 5 being massively overweight, very obese, and 3 being optimal. And so what you want to do at home is go up to your pet and run your hands along the ribs. This is one of the most important things. What you should be able to do for your dog to be scored a 3, which is optimal, is you should feel the ribs, but your fingers should not necessarily fall between them.
Okay.
So you should feel that ribs are there. You should be able to, from above, see that the dog has hips, a hip shape to them.
So it's not a snossage.
Well, I mean, that's the problem with body condition score, is because we have such a wide range of morphologies, it's hard to do this with and include every breed in every observation.
But when their hips are bigger than their chest, it's a good indication it's probably overweight. All right.
And once you start to practice it and go and look at the pictures, you'll get an idea of how to do it. And then you'll be able to recognize if indeed your pet is overweight, and if so, what you need to do is decide you're going to pursue a weight loss program. And that could involve simply changing the way you feed the food you're feeding now, or going to a food that will help you decrease the caloric intake every day.
Keep them out of the kitchen. I know every time I walk by, my kitchen's like, oh, we'll see what's in the refrigerator. It's like, just don't go in there. It helps so much if you're trying to keep your weight under control. This site, Dr. Mozyk, does it also talk about cats? Because there's a lot of pudgy pussy cats out there, too.
It does, and it explains both the dog and the cat body condition scoring. And it's very interesting for your listeners. It's aimed at veterinarians and the technicians that work there, but it's very well written, very understandable for pet owners.
Perfect. So we're supposed to weigh the pet, do a body condition scoring, and do it routinely. What else are they supposed to do?
Well, those are the two most important things to determine if you think the dog's overweight. Probably then what you need to do is get the opinion of your veterinarian, because what that does is it gets somebody that hasn't seen the dog every day for the last several months and gives an opportunity for somebody to say to you, yes, you're right, this is the optimal weight your dog or cat should be at, or no, we need to work on getting some pounds off the animal. And they can also suggest healthy ways to do it and make sure that, especially if the dog's a senior dog, that there's no underlying medical problems that need to be addressed.
And that's very important. I know I've had people come in with a dog in particular who they think is, wow, just kind of suddenly put on a lot of weight, has this pendulous belly, and, you know, it's seeming to drink a lot of water. I don't really know what's going on, and it may actually have a hormonal problem or an endocrine problem with one of its glands. Cushing's disease, for instance. I've even had a dog that presented, they thought it was just really fat and had a lot of fluid in the belly. So there are other reasons other than too many snacks and too much food that will cause a pet to be overweight or at least look overweight.
Right. And so, you know, we really need to rule out anything that's going to cause us a problem and inhibit a successful weight reduction program. I'll give you an example of some things that might hinder a person in their ability to effectively feed their pet. A lot of times, I'm back on the label now, a lot of times you'll read the name of the food, and often you'll think, well, gee, that means it must be related to all the other ones that are named that. And the example I'm going to use is one, because I was just doing something with these kind of foods the other day, was the small bite. And there's a lot of foods that are called small bite. And it's supposed to indicate that, I guess, the kibble is small, so it's easy for them to prehend and chew. And so I guess you think, gee, if one small bite kind of food must be equivalent to another. And I was comparing two manufacturers, major manufacturers, that made the same product name, Mature Small Bites, and I looked at how many calories were in a cup of each. And in one of them, there were 363 calories in a cup. In the second one, there were 504 calories in a cup.
And that can make a huge difference for that little Yorkie who's eating just a wee bit.
It's huge. And it just goes to show you, if you didn't go further and look at feeding recommendations or look at it any further and fed the same amount, you're way off in your caloric intake that day.
So one of the things, Dr. Moser, I think that's so hard, and correct me if I'm wrong, you look at a pet food label and the calories aren't on there. How is a pet owner, or myself as a veterinarian, supposed to know how many calories are in a cup of food?
The regulation to have caloric content listed on the food has passed, and you'll probably, right now it's voluntary to have caloric content on a can or a bag. In about a year or a year and a half from now, it will be on all of them because it's going to be mandatory within a year.
That's right
now,
you great.
You can go to the websites of the food, of the manufacturers, and you can find most of them have calories per cup. Sometimes you have to look a little bit. But it's very helpful to go there because you can estimate your dog's caloric needs based on body weight, which everybody wants to do now. And you can pretty much estimate the amount of food that can, you know, you need to feed on your own and then compare it back to the feeding guide.
Looking at the modern foods that we now have available, and I'm always blown away whenever I go into the grocery store or one of the big box pet stores and see just the rows upon rows of food, you would think that the American dog or cat would just have optimal nutrition. But what is the number one malnutrition problem, or is there a malnutrition problem for cats and dogs right now?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. The biggest malnutrition problem is feeding too much of all the products that you see, resulting in 30% of the dogs being overweight. And from that, then, you say, well, overweight itself is only contributing to a bunch of other things. And then you start listing lameness and respiratory disease and skin disease and diabetes mellitus, and, you know, the list goes on. And you think that by simply the food we pick and how much of it we give and maybe how many meals we feed it in, we affect that outcome.
You brought up something really interesting about the number of meals. Clients will oftentimes tell me, well, how can my pet be overweight? I only feed him once a day, or only feed the cat, or I leave the food out free choice for the cat. They're all the time.
That's right. And when you ask the same owner, well, how much do they eat a day? None of them know. And so basically what you do in that situation is free choice feed, which means you as the owner have no control. You don't know how much is being eaten, and therefore the animal's pretty much left to its own devices and will eat whatever it wants. That's a formula for disaster, because foods today are formulated to be very palatable.
Makes our souls feel so good when you put that food down and the pet immediately is like, oh, this is so good. And if I've done it with my own cats, I'll put down some food and they don't like it. It's like, okay, let me try something else. It's like, just leave it there. So many times they will eat it, but it's like a little kid. All right, let me think about it.
Yeah, and so they weren't really that hungry. And so it all boils down to, you know, total caloric intake per day and how do you manage that. And I think you're right in that once you decide on that caloric intake you're going to feed your pet, then it's wise to break it up into meals. And the food's used more efficiently when it's eaten in small amounts. You get to socialize with your pet several times during the day. So it's a win-win for everybody to feed small meals rather than one large meal or a full bowl all the time.
So, Dr. Moser, I know that you are a boarded veterinary nutritionist. How many meals should you feed the routine pet? 3, 2, what's a good number?
The good number is what works for the owner. What I like to feed, if somebody's around the animal and can do it, I say go for 3 times a day. That's great, because I think what you end up doing is over time feeding less.
But it's probably a very good idea to measure the food instead of just doling it out.
Measuring it is critical. And I encourage people, I mean, it sounds a little overboard. I encourage people to get a gram scale or a kitchen scale. And they're very cheap, and you can measure out how many, you know, and go to that extent. It's real easy to do, and it doesn't take you really that much longer. You can pre-measure foods, like on a Saturday way out, baggies with, especially if they're 200 or smaller gram amounts, they go into a baggie very nicely, and you can have things pre-weighed and feed them during the week that way.
I love that idea of baggies because so many times I'm living or practicing in an area that has a very high senior citizen constituency. And too many times, my husband just keeps feeding more and more off the table and I just can't control it. And I'll say, okay, have a baggie. Show them that baggie. Say, see this? This is all that Fluff is supposed to get today. You can feed it all at one time, which isn't the best, or you can dole it out through the day so you're always giving something because, I know it. Giving food is giving love, but sometimes that love should be lower calories and taking it for a walk instead of, or brushing it if it's a cat, instead of just feeding it, interacting. I love your idea of just, this is an interaction.
Yeah, and I think it works because when you think about it, a lot of the times the dog, when you're in the kitchen and they're in the kitchen, they interact with you not because they're hungry. They want attention. And we interpret it as, I should feed them.
So. And that happens so easily, yes. Now, Dr. Moser, besides being a board nutritionist, I know that you're also a spokesperson for wellness foods. And you talk also about nutritional therapy. What's nutritional therapy?
Well, let me back up and I'll give you a couple of attributes of what wellness is about and how they try to approach just that wellness. But they have a natural philosophy. So natural foods are regulated actually under the government regulations. And what natural means is that there are no chemically synthesized ingredients used in the product. And you can think of the major one that comes to your mind when you think of chemically synthesized ingredients are preservatives. They've really gotten the most press about being potentially harmful in the long term. Things like isoxaquin, BHA, BHT, we've all read about being in the foods. And several years ago, food science came up with the ability to preserve a dry food using vitamin E or mixed tocopherol. And so that was really the advent of the ability of us to be able to make natural foods was a natural preservative. So wellness has all natural ingredients. And they go another step further. They make sort of a wellness list of things that they don't allow, and they call it the no list. And so when you're formulating a food for wellness, there's a list of things you can't use from the very beginning. And that would be animal byproducts, corn, wheat, soy, dairy, artificial preservatives, colors, flavors, sugar. So basically what they say is don't put that stuff in from the beginning. You know, you're not allowed to use it. The other philosophy is trying to keep the ingredient list simple. And I know if you're anything like me, you like to be able to read the list and know what the words mean.
Be able to pronounce it is very nice.
Yeah. And so that's the second thing they really go for, is making it simple for the consumer to understand. The other thing about natural that I want to point out is a lot of people have the thing about natural in their mind that it's berries and sticks and roots and things like that. But really, natural foods are complete in balance. They're very digestible, and they're palatable. They taste good. So, and that's a two-edged sword, as we discussed before. It's good because your pets like the food, but you have to be careful because they will overeat it if you don't feed the proper amount. So basically, the therapeutic idea is to feed top-quality ingredients in the proper amounts, so giving the right amount of protein, fat, carbohydrate, and fiber at every meal, and having it in a very highly digestible package so that the animal gets to utilize what's present.
Well, we're talking right now with Dr. Edward Moser. He is a veterinary nutritionist, and he's giving us some great information on how we can feed our pet to wellness. So please stick around as we listen to a short commercial, and we'll be right back with Dr. Edward Moser.
please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets, but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
Did you know cancer is the number one cause of death in dogs? One out of every three dogs is affected by cancer at some point during his lifetime. And half of those dogs affected die. Shocking, isn't it? Symptoms of dog cancer are nonspecific and often lead to a late diagnosis of the disease. But before it reaches an advanced or incurable stage, cancer exhibits mild but recurring symptoms. If you think your dog is losing weight, has a loss of appetite, looking dull and listless, is non-social, or has any sores, swellings, bumps, or lumps, or abnormal growth anywhere, it's time to visit the vet to make sure everything's well. This message is brought to you by Ellie Mae Pet Supplements. Ellie Mae is an animal healthcare company that creates products which focus on improving the overall health and quality of life for your much-loved pet. Visit us at www.battle-cancer.com for more information on dog cancer and how Ellie Mae Supplements can help your dog.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley, the giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out in the world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Moser, you just said something very interesting, and this is always, when I was in veterinary school and taught and learned that, okay, dogs are omnivores. Kitties are truly carnivores, need that meat. But dogs are omnivores, kind of like people, can eat a little bit of everything, and that if we go back to their ancestors, the dog's ancestor, the wolf, it did eat the grains that it found inside the entrails of the prey that it took down. So why is it that wellness doesn't have corn, wheat, and soy? What are the contraindications for that? Why do you stress not having it?
Let me give you that answer in two parts. One is there's a difference between what they have here and grain-free. So, and they do have grain-free too. But grain-free is basically going more toward getting the carbohydrate content of the product to a low level. And having the protein, it's more of a protein-focused idea, having the protein and the fat be higher.
Okay.
So that would be the grain-free philosophy. Wellness's philosophy really was that they were getting the idea that these products in some animals were causing problems because of reports they were getting, anecdotal reports. And they were getting them over and over. And they said, you know, when we're making this line of products, because these weren't formulated yet. When we make this line of products, why don't we just not use these? You know, in any of the
products. That's simpler.
Yeah, and it's not that we think that, for instance, that every dog has a corn allergy. You know, far from it. You know, if you knew how many dogs ate a product with corn as the first ingredient every day, you'd say, well, every dog would be sick if they, you know, if corn allergy was that prevalent. But it's not. What they did it for was because there are a group of animals who don't do well on corn, let's not add it. We don't need to have it. So let's just from the very beginning not include it. And that's because a lot of the other wellness foods do have their normal amount of carbohydrate in them, like the like other foods on the market. And then they do have a grain-free product, or a couple of products, which are then very low in carbohydrate.
That's totally understandable. I can see why they're doing that. Now, would you call these foods, and people are always concerned, my dog is itchy, so I'm going to change food to a hypoallergenic diet, and they go to the pet store and buy food X. Would this wellness be considered a hypoallergenic diet, or how would you define a hypoallergenic diet first?
Yeah, I don't know whether there really is such a thing. It's almost like being a hypoallergenic dog. I mean, there isn't one.
I believe that one.
Yeah, but I think what people really are looking for is simple diets when they're looking for hypoallergenic diets, and they're really looking for exclusion-type diets. And so what we've put together is a group of diets within the wellness family that are called Simple Solutions. And basically what they are is a diet with one protein source and one carbohydrate source, basically. And the protein source is either a duck, a lamb, or a salmon. And the carbohydrate source is rice in all three of them. And then if you read the label, that's about it. I mean, like the duck and rice formula for the canned is like duck broth, rice, you know, that's it. On the dry, it's like rice, duck, rice protein, and that's it. So if I'm looking for that kind of exclusion diet, those are the kind of products within the wellness group that I'd look at using because they're specifically made for that. They come in a canned and a dry variety because a lot of those dogs that have some itching problems probably have some epidermal water barrier issues, and I'd like to be able to introduce some canned products to them sometimes.
And translate epidermal barrier problem.
What some of these itchy, nasty skinned dogs have is they can't trap the water in their skin layer. And so a lot of times what you'll see is that by adding fats, selectively adding fats, and sometimes omega-3, omega-6 ratios are important. What you can do is try to keep the skin more hydrated, which makes it not so inflammatory.
So someone like ourselves putting on hand lotion to trap moisture in, and yes, we should
right.
be taking our fish oils like our mothers always told us as kids, take those cod liver oil pills. They were right.
Yeah, and if you watch what's coming out in the veterinary literature, at least I'm seeing more and more products that now are topical for dermatitis to do exactly that, to put nutrients and oils into the skin from the exterior, the external.
Because, yes, we're all seeing these itchy animals. To backtrack a little bit, you were talking about natural, and natural being nothing that's synthesized in this food. We're able to pronounce the words that are on the label. Now, the difference between natural and organic, are they the same or are they different?
No, they're different. And a lot of the attributes of the natural food, like nothing chemically synthesized, is pretty much held with the organic product. But really what the organic thing is a process through which a food and ingredients get from either the barnyard or the field all the way to the food. So it's not only the ingredients, although the ingredients have to be handled specially, but almost any ingredient can become organic if it's handled properly. Now, not something chemically synthesized, obviously, but, you know, any other crop or meat or anything like that, except for fish at this point, can be organically produced if you handle their environment correctly. So organic is more of a process by which a food is grown, processed, and manufactured.
Does organic then necessarily mean that this is nutritious and healthy for you or your pet?
No, not at all. Not at all. It means it's been handled in a very conscientious way because it follows all these rules. But if you don't put together an organic diet properly, it's not any good.
So we do have to be so careful reading these labels. Now, raw food. You being a nutritionist, what are your feelings towards raw foods, pro and con? And does wellness make a raw food?
Wellness does not make a raw food. I think that handling the feeding program of a dog or a cat with raw food can be done nicely. A couple things, like you said, though, that you really have to be careful about. Number one, because it's a raw food, you may be involved in the formulation of it at home. And some people, you know, you can buy them, obviously, like you said. But what you really have to make sure of is whatever you're doing is you're getting something balanced. And if you're doing it at home, make sure that you understand that you have to add supplements of some sort to these raw formulations. The things that are most often left out are things like calcium supplements, because people forget that meat is very high in phosphorus and very low in calcium. And other things that are left out are the vitamin and trace mineral mix, because people think that because they're raw foods, they already have enough vitamins and minerals and they don't need to worry about them. And that's not true. They need to be properly supplemented. The other thing to remember is parasites and bacteria are going to be present. And so things like salmonella and E. coli need to be on your mind. And immunocompromised pets should not be fed raw food, and it should not be fed to, in households where there's immunocompromised people and possibly even, you know, children. You need to be very careful. So there is a public health issue, I think, that needs to be addressed. The third thing about raw diets is if there's bones in them, you got to be extremely careful about breaking teeth and perforating intestines because of the inherent problem with chewing up bones.
I know people love the idea, and yes, it does seem so natural, and I fully agree with you. And sometimes it seems as though our pets' intestinal tracts are sturdier than ours, because they many times seem to have that low level of salmonella they can tolerate in a food. But when the stuff comes out the other end, it's still infective salmonella. So just even picking up the poop or playing with a pet that has poop on its paws, you know, is in the cat box or it went outside and stepped in it, then that can be transferred to people. And I love your idea of being so careful with children, because they're not always that best with hygiene and washing their hands with soap and water.
Yeah. So people do it successfully, though.
I think so many things can be done successfully if you really put your mind to it and you follow so many of these safeguards. Dr. Mosiers, you've been talking right now about all these various foods out there, you know, the wellness foods, an excellent brand of food. There's so many factors that go into deciding what to feed our pets. How does that pet owner make sure that you're having that perfect fit, that perfect diet for their pet?
I think one of the things that people need to realize is that when they're feeding a particular food, there's only a handful of things they can look at to really evaluate the food. So they've got to be pretty discerning. Obviously, they want a food that is well accepted by the pet, that the pet's going to eat, you know, readily, and it's not going to cause any gastrointestinal signs. No grumbling of the stomach. You know, no loose stool. No.
I like the fancy word you're about to say, borborygmus.
That's
It's a great cocktail word, you know, cocktail party, and borborygmus, yes, growly tummies.
But a lot of those mild GI signs are something that, when you switch diets, can be present. And guess what? A lot of them, I've found, are because people overfeed when they switch foods, and so you end up with these nondescript kind of low-grade gastrointestinal signs. But so in lieu of that, The other things to look for are energy level, I don't need to explain that. Skin and coat condition, which in general, when you switch a food, you should probably, if you're going to see a difference, if there was maybe something that you were looking to improve, you should start seeing a difference by 2 weeks with change in skin condition. The other thing people need to watch very closely, and you and I are probably people that have watched it and know about fecal scoring, but what people really need to do is keep an eye on the stools that their animals make and realize that there is a 1 to 5 score, you know, 1 being the kind that when the dog has the bowel movement, it splashes on the floor and then up on your belt, and a 5 is when you can go out in the yard and kick the stool over the fence into the neighbor's yard. You want to be about a 3 is the optimal stool. And it's important because it does reflect very much on the amount you feed and the diet you feed. And so you can manipulate the stool very easily by doing a couple things with your feeding program.
So I think all pet owners are part scatologist. You know, we, yeah. we study poop.
And it should be.
Yes, it's very important to know. I think one of the reasons I typically don't recommend for cats these automated boxes because I want to know what my cats are putting out, poop and pee. And if I see something different because they tend to go in the same areas in the box, then I know, ah, yeah, this one's having some issues. Ooh, that one's changing. And yes, I think scatology is a science that we all need to be excellent in.
So those are, you know, some of the things that will give people a clue as to whether they're on the right track. But really, you know, I don't, and probably you were like me. When you went to school, people said to you, listen, once you get an animal on a successful diet, don't change it ever. and the reason that I knew to do that was I didn't want to get phone calls from clients in the middle of the night saying, oh, I switched my dog to a new food today and now they're vomiting. And that's because of inappropriate diet change. So a lot of times veterinarians are hesitant to have people change foods. But I think that experimenting with different foods with your pet is the only way to see whether you can do a better job.
And just because the breeder recommended X doesn't necessarily mean for the same breed, your pet, it's going to be the best. And probably, kind of summarizing it, ask your veterinarian. You know, the kid at the pet store may have the best of intentions, but may not know. The breeder knows what's good for their particular dogs, but is it going to be your particular dog? And neighbors have some good ideas, but I'll always say, where do they get their veterinary degree? So, Dr. Edward Moser, I really appreciate you being with us today. You've given us some great information, how to read labels, how to feed, what to look for, explaining the terminology. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great being with you to talk about dog food today.
Great. And cat food, too.
And cat food.
So you've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best pet owner possible. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is sponsored by Ellie Mae Pet Supplements. Ellie Mae is an animal healthcare company that creates products which focus on improving the overall health and quality of life for your much-loved pet. Visit us at www.battle-cancer.com for more information on dog cancer and how Ellie Mae supplements can help your dog.